Hi, I'm Adrian. And right this moment, there are tens of thousands of Black entrepreneurs around the world creating amazing startups that you've never heard about. For some reason, the mainstream media doesn't cover Black entrepreneurs as much as it should. But on this show, we find these amazing founders. We sit down with them. We figure out how they got their ideas launched, what their struggles were, what they're afraid of, what drives them. My hope is that you have enough firepower from listening to this show to go out there and start your own business. Or if you're working on something, continue plowing through it. Let's have an amazing time together. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good. Well, it's afternoon over here, but it's morning for you.
Yes, good afternoon.
How's everything going?
It's going good. We had a late night last night and just trying to catch up. But this whole week has been crazy. Afrotech's in town in the Bay, and there's just been so many different events, so many different people, and it's been a really long week. And today's the last day of all the festivities.
How's that been?
It's been good. It's been really good. I've met people from all over the states and in different industries, and it's just really this conference is really great. It's great to be around Black excellence and people who are striving for more and creative and innovators and trying to secure the bag and
secure the bag.
Yeah.
I love that. But I've been getting mixed reviews from a lot of people about the conference. So it's very, I think like most conferences, your experience will sort of be based on, where you are, what you're doing and what you're there for. Mm-hmm. So I definitely take all the reviews with a pinch of salt, because I'm like, I don't know what your context is. So some people are excited about it. Others are not sure if that was worth the money or the trip. So I think the experience is based on the person and, their unique story or what they're there for.
Yeah, I agree. And to be fair, I did not go to the conference. What I was there for was to network. And I basically leveraged all the networking, happy hours and different after hours activities. And I guess, you're right. It's different. I didn't pay to fly out here. I didn't pay for a conference ticket. I didn't pay for the hotel. I didn't, have a lot of other expenses associated with travel. So maybe, that definitely probably shaped my experience. But yeah, I still had a good time. Sorry for those that didn't.
Okay, that's amazing. I mean, I was definitely going to be over there. I was, and then I wasn't, and then I was again. And by the time we decided, okay, I'm going to come over there, there was no tickets available and the flights. And I was like, but this sounds like just a little bit too much. So I'm just going to park it and just go next year.
I think that what would you be going for?
I think for me, it's the network, really. Mm-hmm. That's the key thing. I think finding good people who are in this space, who are actually building startups, I think it's very important to me personally. I mean, that's literally why I'm doing Gritly, is to actually connect people who are in this space together.
Oh, yeah. Because this would have been very valuable for you.
Exactly. So in my case, there are no blueprints to how to build a startup, as a Black founder, because, less than 1% of us actually get funded. And when you do, it's not a lot of money compared to what you actually need to build a high growth startup. So we're definitely in this phase where we, I think as Black founders, have to sort of define what this roadmap is, right? If you look at the numbers by themselves, right? If you say less than 1% of people get funded, that's less than 1 out of 100 people. That's not a lot of people that get money. So there's definitely alternatives that you have to look at. And it'd be great to just know, how are other people doing this? What are some of the sacrifices that people are making? I know the sacrifices that I'm making, they hurt terribly bad. It's great to know what other people are doing as well. How are people actually funding this stuff? How are you building a team? How are you growing a team? What technology are you using? How are you able to do that? And the truth is, a lot of us still have full-time jobs, right?
That's right.
Of everything, how are we doing this? Are we winning? Or are we just spinning our wheels in the same spot?
Yep, I totally agree. You're in the right mind frame.
So,
well, at least you have the AfroTech app. So, I mean, that's definitely, we'll give you lots of leads for what you're working on, because everyone that was in the app was at AfroTech, or at least most of the people. And, you know, that gives you at least a point of contact right there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you definitely had a good experience there.
Yes, I did. I had a great time.
That's amazing. So the conference is officially over now.
I believe it ended yesterday, but the events are concluding today. So I'll be going to a few of those basically all day.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Okay, so I'm here with Arabia Umrani, who is the founder of a startup called Unwind. Very interesting platform. So why don't you start off by telling us what Unwind actually is and, you know, how you got started with that?
Thank you. So, hey, Adrian, thank you for having me. Unwind is a booking platform that connects women to really unique and off the beaten path local experiences in wellness, art, philanthropy, food, adventure, just different types of these really great activities via local women hosts. And women that are either traveling or they're local to the city as well, but they just want to reinvent their lifestyles or take on new hobbies, and they come to this platform to book. So this platform is exclusive to women and all self-identifying women. So if you're a transgender woman, you're more than welcome as well. It's a platform that brings women together and allows women to become entrepreneurs by empowering themselves to curate different experiences.
Okay, that sounds interesting. And there's a lot that you just unloaded there. So I'm going to pick it apart, you know, from everything that you just said. So the first thing that you said that is off the beaten path. Now, right. What exactly does that actually mean in this case?
Yes. Yeah, so off the beaten path means things outside of the typical touristic things to do. I think what's going on is we're in a time where over tourism is happening. So the same touristic landmarks and touristic city guides and the things that have been widespread are getting too much traffic. That's number one, and it's causing environmental issues. And also, people have the accessibility to travel more than ever. So they want to continue being intrigued and continue enjoying the places they love, but they want to do new things. So that is what off the beaten path means. It's these new activities, these new experiences, these new relationships that are outside of the norm, and even give you a taste and a look into what a local's life is. Because it's outside of the touristic areas.
Okay, that's interesting. So I think the first thing that comes to mind, so I don't identify as a female or woman, but the platform mm-hmm. is very vegan. But what's the difference between just going onto Google, buying myself a ticket to some location and just going there and doing these activities for myself? You know, why do I have to connect with a local? I can literally just go online and figure out, you know, all the local hotspots and just do that trip by myself. Like, what exactly is the unique difference between connecting with a local and just going there and exploring myself and actually maybe running into a local and having them be my tour guide?
Mm-hmm. So to me, that sounds like you going to, like, maybe you find, a local bar you want to go to. I think that's fine. I think my platform is more of activities, curated activities that you want to do that puts you in the shoes of locals. So if you found a local bar online and you want to check that out, that's wonderful. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's good that you go and you meet the local there. But my platform is specifically made for women who want to do really unique activities. So for example, we have one of our hosts on the platform does silent disco beach yoga. So she takes a small group of women out to Baker Beach, and she's a yoga instructor for many years. And she has curated this yoga class that's directly on the beach and right across from the Golden Gate Bridge. And she's found a way to pair these really awesome disco tones with and pair them really nicely with these different yoga poses. And then another example is I have a host in San Francisco and she hosts the last Black neighborhood of San Francisco. And you're right. You would be able to Google where the last Black neighborhood of San Francisco is. It's Bayview, but you wouldn't be able to get that experience of being guided by a local.
Okay, that makes sense. So this platform, is it available on the web? Is it a mobile app? You know, like where exactly, you know, how does it work? Like if I have someone that wants to sign up for this platform now and book an experience, how do they do that?
Awesome. Yes. So right now, well, we launched in August, so we're really new, but we're in 14 international cities as of now. And you can go, we are a web app, so you can go and onto the platform and book an experience via joinunwind.com, joinunwind.com, joinunwind.com.
Okay, so so someone gets on the platform, they sign up, and they get connected to a host. Mm-hmm. How do you verify these hosts, and how do you verify people that are coming onto the platform?
So everyone's verified via email and encouraged to have a profile photo. You can't book without a profile photo and profile information. As far as on the host side, I do personally vet every single host. I meet them. I go through their experience and, you know, check them out if they're good to go. A leg up that I think has really helped is a lot of these hosts that are on my platform are super hosts from Airbnb. That's been something that I feel like has given me a little bit of a leg up and made it a lot easier, is that I was able to recruit the best hosts from an already internationally known platform.
Okay. So, I mean, that actually brings up a few questions. The first one is, what's the difference between the Airbnb experience and the Unwind experience? Are there any differences?
There are differences. Unwind has different curated experiences that are not on Airbnb. And if you want to take it a level deeper.
Yeah, sure. Unwind, let's go there.
Oh, yeah, thanks. So Unwind, when you book an experience on Unwind, you're supporting a women entrepreneur. What I'm very proud about Unwind is that we offer the lowest commission rates in all of the industry. And you're supporting women's businesses because every experience you book with them, get more money so they could have the same. So say if you booked a local experience where the local met you at the bar and it was $10 or whatever, because we have lower commission rates for our hosts, because we believe in economic development for women, more money is going back into that woman's pocket. So not only are you contributing to sustainable tourism by empowering economic development for women on Unwind, but also Unwind has a selection of curated experiences that are not on any other platform. They're exclusive to Unwind.
Okay. That sounds like you're injecting, you know, revenue into the gig economy. So it's Unwind sounds like a platform that's going to power that. So how big is it right now? You know, how many users do you have? How many hosts do you have? And how big do you see it getting?
Yes. Yeah, so right now we have 25 hosts and we have about 130 users, and it's only been 3 months. And I'm just super excited about growing it. I've no doubt that this will take on a virality element and explode. The experiences market alone is generating $183 billion a year. And with women being 70% of all travelers and responsible for over 92% of all online travel purchases, we have a purchasing power of $15 trillion a year in the travel space as a whole. So the fact that this product is curated exclusively for women and empowers women and connects women, it will not be long before when we get the brand visibility that we'll be doing a lot of volume.
So it sounds like there's a lot of growth that could happen there. You're definitely going after a big, big, big market, which is huge. But you are a solo founder, right?
So that's right.
You started this by yourself. Mm-hmm. And from what I gather, you don't have a background in technology. For someone else out there who is listening to this podcast right now, and they just got super inspired by what you've told them, but they're not a technical founder, is what you call someone that's not technical, who can't write code themselves or build a platform. how did you do this? How did you put up this platform without actually having a background in technology or computer science or programming?
That's awesome. I think this is the most important question on this entire call. On this entire podcast, because I just want everyone to know that just because you didn't study computer science or you don't come from an engineering background or you're not in tech doesn't mean that you can't learn how to do it or you can't get the skills or get the connections to start thinking about how you can turn your product or your idea and make it tech. To answer specifically, I just read a lot. I read a lot of different articles. I surrounded myself with people in tech so they can give me resources. I also did YC Online Startup School, which was pivotal in me understanding this new ecosystem and how to navigate and how to understand different business models that are in tech and really just find, okay, how can I fit my passions and fit my ideas into one of these business models. So YC Online Startup School was really helpful, surrounding myself with other people in the tech industry that were more than happy to pass along resources and support. So it started there. And then after I did, my research, I decided I wanted to do a marketplace. I'm not a coder. So I was like, okay, let me look at contractors. Decided not to do contractors. I decided to build it myself. I found out all these no-code platforms like Bubble and some other platforms out there that are no-code. And then I ran into this platform called ShareTribe, which is a marketplace builder for a no-code marketplace builder. So that is a way that I just kind of just kept digging and digging and digging to find out something that I could work with. And yeah. I did it, and whoever is listening to this and inspired to getting tech with their idea or their product now, you can do it. And I'm happy to be someone who's at least taken the first step. So I hope to see many more non-technical people take the leap and try to get involved too.
That sounds like quite the journey. So a lot of what you said there was you read a lot, you met a lot of people who were willing to help you, and you also took the initiative to first figure out what you don't know. Right. And then once you knew exactly what you don't know, you're trying to figure out what you need to know and how you go about getting that information.
That's right.
One of the key things there is that you found people who are willing to help you.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of hard. From my experience, is you don't really get people walking around saying, hey, you want to build a tech platform and, attack a $183 billion industry. I'll help you for free. So where do you start, right? So you're in the Bay Area, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is tech central. But for someone else who unfortunately doesn't have the luxury of being on the West Coast, how do they go about finding people who are in tech to help them?
There's so many different online communities. There's so many different Facebook groups. And, I was also one of those people before when I was getting off the ground professionally and having all these different entrepreneurial ideas. I was kind of in a pool of people who, at times it was difficult to receive help, just surrounded by people with the mindset of, if I'm going to give you something, I want something in return. Either you're going to pay me for my 15-minute coffee or you need to buy my ebook or, just people who, and I'm not saying anything bad about that. That's not the way that I operate, but, I think that it was difficult for me to seek help in some of the communities that I was in before. But all I'm saying is if you're in there and you're around those type of people, there's other people you can surround yourself with that are resourceful. And if you're living in Timbuktu somewhere and you don't really have that community, just go online. There's plenty of tech communities online, founder communities online. And there, I have personally met so many people that are, jumping at the opportunity to help in some way. And even myself, I'm more than happy to connect with anyone who wants to connect after hearing this podcast and talk you through it and help you any way I can.
Okay. That's a good way to go about it is realizing that if you don't find yourself in a city where there's a lot of, tech activity, you definitely have to go online. And I'm just going to do a quick plug there. That's why I started Gritly. So
awesome.
if you do want to connect with people, right? shameless plug. get on to Gritly.co and connect with Black founders doing this. So I'm just going to backtrack away from unwind for a little bit and talk mm-hmm. about, you know, your full-time job, right? So
yes.
how are you managing to build this platform and manage a full-time job? And by the way, what is your full-time job?
Yes. Yeah, so I think that I do have a little bit different story than others. So I am a flight attendant for Delta, and I've been with them for 5 years now. And I've worked in the travel space for almost 10 years. I used to do operations and customer experience at hotels before that. And I've traveled to 56 countries as well. And so I work with Delta. I have an extremely flexible schedule. I only work about 10 days a month, so I can be on the full-time side for Unwind, building my future. And most founders are juggling 2-3 jobs to bootstrap their startup, to fund their startup out of their own pockets. And I think that's good. I just think that to answer your question, I'm in a bit of a different situation because I have a different full-time occupation than others that requires less time constraints.
Gotcha. And have you had any difficulties in doing that, or has it just been smooth sailing?
No, it's been smooth sailing. You know, the reason why, you know, building a tech company is so great and important is because you literally can work from anywhere. So with my job, you know, it has me moving around a lot in different cities, and it's fine. When I'm ready, when I'm off the plane, I just open my laptop up, connect to my hotspot, and I'm back at work for Unwind. So and the same thing with other tech startups. It's, you know, it starts from your computer, and you can be anywhere at any time working on your future, working on your startup. So I think that's one of the beautiful things about tech, is that it's on demand. It's whenever you open your computer.
Okay, so one thing that you brought up there is funding. Now, mm-hmm. Starting a startup is definitely not cheap. It requires growing a team for the most part, but yes. as a solo founder, you do definitely have to start things off by yourself. Which brings me to ask the question, so as a founder, as a solo founder, you end up doing everything, right? You're doing the marketing, right. You're doing the PR. In your case, you're doing the product too, God help you. Mm-hmm. you're doing everything. How did you get all those skills? Your background, from what I understand, is you went to Georgia State, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yes. you have a degree in journalism and PR.
Right.
You know, where does marketing come into play? Where does, you know, development come into play? At this point, you're literally a product manager.
Right.
How does that happen?
You know, I don't know. Yeah.
Are you a superwoman? That's what I'm asking.
No, I'm not. I'm far from that, honestly. I really do not have a concrete answer for that. A lot of it is self-taught. A lot of it is self-learned. A lot of it is me making a lot of mistakes. You know, it's mistakes and then learning and then reading and asking questions and going to listen to talks, going to listen to panels, you know, connecting with different leaders in the industry on LinkedIn, going for coffees, learning, mistakes, and just learning and continuously improving. That's the only way I can answer how I've been able to do most of all of it.
Okay, so it sounds like the learning never stops, right? You
always
have to continue learning. So my next question will probably be time management. So we've got a full-time job, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which in your case, you know, you have a little bit of leeway there, right? So that's mm-hmm. that's very, I'm not going to call it luck, because you definitely worked your way to get to that point. So it's not luck, right? And then there is, I'm guessing, family requirements, family commitments, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's, you know, the other half, you know, a romantic partner in the picture as well. And there's also this learning, and there's also building this huge startup, right? So how are you managing all that time-wise?
You know, I'm doing it to the best of my ability. Will I say I'm the best girlfriend now? No. Will I say I'm the best family member right now? No. Will I say I'm the best friend right now? No. I think that someone, but I think all of, you know, my loved ones and my priorities in my life, I've either set them up to be okay and steady, and my family members understand that I'm working on something, I'm building something. I think when it comes to prioritizing and making a decision that you want to build something, you have to have this kind of like relentless pursuit about what you're doing. And you have to just know that, you know, what you're building comes first. And for me, prioritizing other people or other things, it hasn't really been a problem, because I have a clear understanding that, you know, I need to do what I need to do. And then if I have any extra time, that's when I'm going to devote to it. I'm not going to compromise my time working on my future for something that I just know that can wait. So that's how I handle it. I'm not saying that I am the guru at managing relationships while building a startup, because I'm far from that. I just think that I have a really great people around me that understand that I'm working on something really important to my future, and they've really been able to have a high level of understanding about me not really being there available all the time like I used to be. And then also I think that also a background in travel has really prepared me for how to prioritize different things. Working as a flight attendant, we kind of work under really stressful expectations, and we have to make a lot of quick decisions. And I think that has prepared me of how to easily evaluate what's most important and quickly detach from what's not.
Interesting. So it sounds to me like you at some point had a conversation with your family, at least the close family members, and you know, you kind of explained to them what you're trying to do, and you probably forewarned them of all the sacrifices that you were going to make, and I'm sure you included some friends there as well. Is this kind of how it went, or was it kind of, you know, over time, tell family members what you're up to, and then they understand truly what the sacrifices that you're about to make mean and get your support? Or, you know, how did that conversation go?
Well, as far as for the closest people in my life, they've known about me for, you know, my family has known that I've been like a hustler, like since I was born. I've always had some different project. Even if, you know, if we want to dial back to school, I was always heavily, heavily involved in my school, after school programs, different clubs, just heavily involved in like the community growing up. And I think it's very clear to my closest people in my life that I'm someone who works really hard at, you know, what I'm passionate about. And I'm out there, you know, getting it, or I'm a go-getter. So I think that's very clear. So it's not hard to have that conversation, like, hey guys, you know, this is important to me, I'm not going to be around. That's not a hard conversation to have with the closest people to me, because they know that that's in my blood and who I am. As far as being a startup founder and being in a relationship, that's, I think, a more challenging conversation. But luckily, and again, I think this is a little bit, not like most, but my boyfriend, he's in the startup space as well. So he equally understands the demand that I'm facing with working on my product. And he understands. I'm not sure if that's the answer you're looking for, but it's not a hard conversation to have with people who just naturally understand who you are.
Okay. So it sounds to me like you have an entrepreneurial past. And you've always sort of been in the entrepreneurial space. Is Unwind your first startup? Is it your first revenue generating business?
So it's not my first revenue generating business. From what I can remember, is
selling Twinkies.
No. I won't even go far that far back. I'll just start with the last, like, you know, my adult years. My sister and I are both flight attendants, and when we became flight attendants and kind of built this brand for ourselves as these travelers that, you know, do these amazing experiences all over the world, and we meet these great people, and When we started to build that brand on social about us and how we travel and why we travel, got a lot of interest from our peers, colleagues, and just different newcomers to our brand and to our different media content that they were interested in a career in aviation. So we decided to create a book. We wrote a book called A Seat on the Jump Seat. And the jump seat is the seat that flight attendants sit on. We wrote the ebook and we sold like over 100 copies. And it was like one summer we did that in like 2000 and I don't even know. And so we did the ebook and then we saw demand from that. So we started doing consulting and helping different flight attendants with their interview.
So one of the interesting things about, I think, being a startup founder is that the truth is that it's very hard to build startups, right? Mm-hmm. There's no going around it. It's super, super hard, right? It's very hard. You really have to want to do it. And it's going to cost you a lot of sacrifice. And it's also very expensive. And you have to fund it in some way, right? That's how right. How are you doing that right now? You know, is it, do you have a trust fund somewhere? Were you able to take out a big, were you able to take out a big bank loan? Should I be coming to you for money? You know, how are you funding this? Because, you know, you've got all the tools in the back end. I'm assuming the platform that you're using to build the app, you have to pay for that as well.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to pay for all these other tools like Canva. You use that to do your graphics or whatever right. It is. How are you paying for all this stuff?
This is a great question. How am I paying for all this stuff? Well, income from my other hustles and other jobs. So that's why I'd never recommend a founder to quit their full time until a startup gets popping. But yeah, income from my other jobs, income from my other investments that I have that support me. And also a little bit of sacrifice. I mean, if we're just looking at the grand scale, I don't spend over $100 a month like other ladies do to get their nails done. I don't spend over $200, $300, $400, $500 a month to get my hair done like other women. And that's trivial. Like just because you pay for that doesn't mean you're bad or whatever. Like, and I don't want to come off a certain way. All I'm saying is that certain luxuries that, you know, women like to afford and have for themselves, I decided to sacrifice those things because I wanted disposable income to use for a startup. And but this is also something that I've kind of been bred into because, again, I worked in travel. I knew that I love traveling. Every dime I would save, it would go to travel. I've never been someone who's very materialistic or, you know, need things that would require maintenance, high maintenance. I have always been someone who's sort of a penny pincher, but will blow money on really extravagant, not extravagant, but really, really stimulating travel experiences.
And that's something that you definitely hear a lot with the millennial generation, which right. I'm assuming you are, is, mm-hmm. you know, we definitely love our experiences. We pay for experiences.
Right.
But just to step back for a little bit. So let's paint the picture, right? So 90% of startups fail, right? This is the industry norm, right? So we've got that stat. Right. So 90% of startups fail. Less than 1% of Black founders get funded. Mm-hmm. Startups are hard. You have to make extreme amounts of sacrifice with family, with friends, with loved ones, with children, in some cases. Mm-hmm. You save a lot of your money. You limit yourself from going out and getting, you know, fancy stuff done and taking care of yourself with, you know, the extravagant things that the trappings of modern life. And my question is, why? Why do all that? Like, it sounds rough to me personally, but why go through all that to build this platform?
Well, for me, every time I do interviews or just get faced with these questions, I kind of struggle. Like, okay, well, what is the right answer to say? And I don't have a right answer. The answer that I'm choosing is that I was never born, bred, whatever, to work for the man. I was never born or bred to work for someone else. A little bit about my background is I come from two gritty, gritty, gritty entrepreneurial parents. My dad was, he's a retired artist, and he is someone who set the foundation of, you know, when you don't work, you don't eat. And we kind of got, were raised on those principles of, you know, of high level of using your high, using our high level of creativity to make products and to constantly create. And so, my mom as well, very entrepreneurial as well. She did nonprofits, she did different things. And that's all I saw growing up. I didn't see two corporate parents pushing paper. And this is not to say one thing's good and one thing's bad. This is just my peculiar story. That's right. So that's how I grew up. I didn't grow up envisioning a life working for corporate or working for someone. I always knew that I was going to be an entrepreneur.
So I personally work full time. I still work for the man. I'm not going to talk about, you know, my experience there because this podcast is definitely about you. But one of the things that I know is that there's a lot of people out there who are working for the man, right? They have full-time jobs. They might not be thinking about startups just yet. They might have, you know, some ideas of, you know, things that they want to make, but they're not too sure about it. How does someone go from that world into startups? Because it's quite a mind shift of how to think about problems and how to think about solving problems. Because when you work for a corporate company, right, there's a lot of people. You've got marketing departments, you've got sales, you've got PR. How does one go from saying, okay, well, let's say someone's in engineering or they're in marketing. How do they go from that mindset to the mindset of a founder? You know, how did you make that shift? Because there is a shift that happens, you know, how did you get to that point?
That's right. You know, so I just want to start off and say that at times I feel incredibly jealous of people who have corporate jobs. And the jealousy that I have is because you have two things that are extremely valuable. You have knowledge of structure and you have resources in your colleagues and people you directly know, you directly have relationships and work with. So those are two very valuable resources. So if you have an idea and you're like, you know what, I want to make my own thing, the first thing I recommend is to start the chatter going, whether you want to bring in some of your closest colleagues and start putting your minds together and using the power of network to build these great ideas. Second thing I want to recommend is really doing things that take you out of one task thinking, one lane thinking, and focusing more on bigger ideas and I guess thinking of everything as a whole. I feel like with corporate, you really kind of focus on your own department or your own projects, kind of a one lane thing. And everyone, you put everyone's thousands of lanes together and you've just got this mega freeway that, you know, that's running the company. So someone who is in senior level management or someone who's creating something, you have to think like you control the highway. So that's my answer. Leveraging your network of your professional colleagues and people you work well with and doing things that maybe on your off time get you out of your one lane thinking and really kind of igniting your creative side to create and think in big ideas.
So one thing that a lot of people say, especially people in the startup world, is that it's always best to look at your industry, right? So one thing people say is look at what your company is not doing. You know, where are the gaps in your industry that can be filled up? You know, what's that one thing you wish you had at the company, but you didn't? So I think it starts off with definitely having deep insider knowledge of the industry that you're working in, which is definitely a huge advantage. Now, I'm not saying that you have to build a startup in your industry. You can definitely do something else outside of that. You could be, you know, in marketing and you decide to build a physical product for kids, right? You can definitely do that. But there's definitely one thing about the deep knowledge within your industry to go after certain markets, which it sounds to me like it's what you've done, right? You understand travel. You know, you literally travel all the time and you say, you know what, I'm going to use the knowledge that I've built up over these 10, 15 years.
Yes.
And I'm going to put that into a startup. And I'm going to build something that I know people would use because, hey, I've got this deep knowledge about this industry.
Right.
So that's one of the more important things. Now, for someone who is not in that position, how can they go about that?
Yes, it definitely gives you a leg up when you've got a deep knowledge. The good thing about my experience is I have been working in customer experience for a long time, and customer experience matters. It matters when you're building a startup because that's how you slowly find product market fit. So that's how you achieve, you know, strong traction and revenue and user. That's how you get them to your platform, to your product. So say I work in travel, but I have this great dream to build a business in French, you know, with French fries. That means I'm hanging out with the French Fry Club on Saturdays. That means I'm researching every article about French fries and how they're made and who makes them best. And I'm looking at all the different French fry, like I'm looking at every different restaurant that serves the best French fries in my city. It's just because you don't know something doesn't mean you can't learn it. You can't find out. You can't surround yourself with people who do know it. It doesn't hurt that, you know, you are in one industry for a good period of time, and then you have always had this curiosity to, you know, work in another industry. It's okay. Our minds, I don't think that we give ourselves enough credit for what we can do. We just focus on what we can't do. And we get really afraid of just being in spaces that are unfamiliar to us. And I just want everyone to consistently challenge themselves. Our capacity, our mind's capacity is so vast. Our ability to learn, our innate ability to catch on to things quickly, especially women. We do not give ourselves enough credit. And long story short, if you don't know, figure it out. And, you know, just research and surrounding yourself with a network of people that are industry experts will definitely help you.
So there's two things that you mentioned there. One is traction, and two is product market fit. For someone else out there who is not in the startup world yet, what is traction, and actually what is product market fit, and how do you get those things? And I can say that those are two very important things when building a startup, mm-hmm. but what are they, and how have you uniquely positioned yourself to get traction and to get product market fit?
Yes. So traction, analytics and data is everything in software and in tech. And you'll quickly come to learn that when you are building your product. Traction means people that are finding your product online or downloading your app or signing up or making transactions. I would even go to say that traction can even be, you know, your funnel. So if you have a sales funnel or marketing funnel that you've done through content, you can see how many people are sharing it, you know, looking at the virality of the different marketing you've done. And that's traction. Just like, are people interested in what I'm doing? Now, product market fit is when you find that your product is serving a need at a large volume, at scale, to a large group of people. The honest truth is many founders never find product market fit. It's something incredibly challenging. So how have I uniquely positioned myself to do both? I honestly think that it had a lot to do with my early branding as, you know, this travel person, someone extremely resourceful for what to do when you land a certain place, because I've been there. And the people and my colleagues, my peers online, different people I know online, you know, they've gone through this journey with me from my very first trip out of the country to, as a flight attendant, I've been out of the country before then, but, you know, just they've been with my journey throughout travel. So I've been able to uniquely position myself due to establishing a strong brand online. And also to know where my people at. I know where all the people curious about travel are at. I know where you are because I'm there too. So I think those are two strong ways that I think I have uniquely positioned myself. Planting seeds.
Mm-hmm. Have you found product market fit yet? Do you think you found it?
No. And I'm very, very critical about that. No, I don't think I have. I think that until I get to a certain revenue point, I'm just going to say no. And I think that because to say that you found it as a whole, that's a big thing. And I think that I'm still honestly in the early stages of testing out what works with the product and, you know, what my customers want and what they don't want. So I don't think I have found it product market fit in totality just yet. No.
Okay. So one way a lot of people usually sort of gauge if they've achieved product market fit yet is everything break-in, right? So in the past, when I think that you had, you know, self-hosted servers and stuff like that, like product market fit will mean that, okay, everything's in just smoking out of control because people are just downloading your app or they're just signing up in just droves, hundreds, thousands of people all at once.
Right.
But one of the key things that you mentioned there is that you had an audience before.
Right.
I think it's important to note that as products or developing products become commoditized, in your case, you know, you wanted to build a platform. There's already a configurable solution that you can then jump on and build your unique skin on top of that and get it to work how you want it. Mm-hmm. Product building product is becoming more of a commodity. Where 20 years ago, it was the unique skill that you needed. You had to have very deep knowledge. Then you had to be the computer science major to be able to get anything up and running. So that brings us to developing, you know, products in the modern era now, is that you have to have an audience. And it sounds like you had built an audience up to that point. So
right.
I think what I want to highlight is the importance of building an audience. And in your case, you built an audience in the industry that you love, doing what you enjoy. So for someone else out there who is thinking about, hey, you know, maybe I want to do a startup, but I don't have any ideas right now. Mm-hmm. What can they start off with? Can they start off with just building an audience? Can they do that? And how do they do that?
Yes, they can. And you can build an audience or join a community. I think that the secret leg up of starting something and making it on a bit of a faster track for success and potential product market fit is having access to a wide community of people who like what you're building or like something in the industry of what you're building. So yes, I did have an audience and I am a part of several online and offline travel communities. So that's my answer for someone who either wants to build an audience or if you don't want to build an audience, you just want to be a part of an audience, you join a community.
Okay. So I'm actually on your blog right now. So you blog on Medium, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there's this little section where you spoke about traveling overseas as a Black person and the experience of people, you know, asking you questions about where you're from, not understanding that you are American and you're not African.
I do want to let you know that was a guest blog. Another one of the members of Unwind wrote the blog about her experience finding her Black girl magic while traveling to different countries in the world and studying and going to school in Hong Kong and living in China for a bit as well. So that article was not written by me, but it was written by one of our lovely Unwind members.
And can you speak on like that theme? Like, is that something that you hear about in the black travel group circles?
About having difficulty meeting with different cultures? I'm sorry, what is the question?
Sorry, the question was, so on this particular blog post, this guest blogger spoke about being overseas and having difficulty with having to explain herself, you know,
right.
You know, why are you not from Africa? You know, why, right. we're not expecting you to be a middle-class citizen, right? They're expecting
right.
someone who's low income. You know, is that a common theme for Black travelers?
So I can't speak on the millions of travelers, but for me, that's not my experience. I think that this is a really great question. I think that that's not been my experience. I haven't had those overt questions asked, but I have been surrounded by many people who just wanted to be near me to pick up the nuggets without asking. So maybe just not those like blatant questions of like, oh, I thought, you know, Black people are poor, you know, But more questions like, oh, okay, so, you know, where's your family from? What did your parents do? You know, those, I guess, more tailored questions. But yeah, there is a curiosity in the world about African-American people, especially because the media has the media has portrayed Black people to be one thing. And I think it's changing now. The narrative is definitely changing about the multitude and expansion of several types of Black people in our community. But yeah, to answer your question, I think the world is curious. I think that it's not uncommon that Black people are being asked about their personal lives because people around the world want to hear what we're truly like, not necessarily from the news or from music or from media. They want to know from the own local's mouth, from the own person's mouth.
So with Unwind, you know, what's worked very well and what hasn't worked so far?
What's worked well and what hasn't?
With regards to your strategies of how you approach things, you know, what things did you try that absolutely worked very well? And, you know, it could be marketing, it could be product, it could be PR. And what are the things that really have just not gone well, like no matter what you tried?
I don't know. I'm not someone that likes to say this didn't work, because I'm the type of person to try something and just like a Rubik's Cube, just flip it so many different times to make it work. So so how about I reframe the question? What's worked really well and what's been more challenging, but I'm still working on it?
Go for that. Perfect.
So what's worked really well? I think my marketing has been well. I think my storytelling ability has been worked well. And that is evident because when you're building a two-sided marketplace, you've got two problems to solve. You've got to fill one side, which is the people that are coming to the platform to book these different experiences and come on as travelers and fulfill that space. Then you've got to have the supply base. So all your hosts coming in, you've got to vet them. You've got to make sure you've got good people. You've got to make sure you've got a good balance. So it's really a big monster to take on. So I decided to start with the supply first, and I went on to onboard hosts. And what's gone really well, to my surprise, is the fact that hosts are really excited to join the platform. It's really no question. What's helped is that there's already these different businesses out there for experiences. So women that are hosting are familiar with, you know, what I'm doing. And, you know, it's just about, oh, well, we can do it on this platform, which is better. And this is what, you know, the conscious position that I want to take in, you know, developing this travel movement for women. So I think that's been going well. So marketing for hosts has been going well. What's been challenging, but I'm still trying to flip it to work, is my, I would say my sales for not sales, my, I guess, well, we'll just keep it in marketing. My marketing for travelers, I've really tried to go the Facebook group route.
Oh man.
And I know, yeah, we were talking about
man.
This earlier.
Oh man. Oh,
I know.
Man, we're going to dive into that now.
Yeah.
We're gonna dive
you know what?
Let's go there. Let's go there, please. Let's take this opportunity to tell everybody out there happens when you launch a startup and you try and creep on a Facebook group.
Yeah, that's hilarious. You know, I had to learn it the hard way. And,
what is the hard way?
The hard way is getting a bunch of no's. The hard way is getting a lot of doors slammed in your face and it actually hits your nose. Like, that's the hard way.
So I think for anybody listed, what we're talking about is, so you have a startup in X industry and you have the smart idea to, hey, let me go on Facebook and look at what are the groups out there in this space. Mm-hmm. And well, behold, you find yourself, you know, five juicy 10,000 plus person groups. And you're like, oh man, I'm going to launch my startup here. Here we go.
Right.
I've got my first 1,000 users in here. Let's do it. And there's two things that happens, right? Now you join the groups, but if you're lucky enough, you've been in those groups, right? So at least you've built up some social cred. But let's say you haven't, right? Like in my case, right? And a lot of other people's cases as well. And you jump in this group chat or this group and you post your startup. And it's this long story about, you know, what you're trying to do and change the world and all this other great stuff. And it's just crickets, right? Like maybe you get a couple of likes and it's completely ignored.
That's
or two,
hilarious.
The admins of the group are just like, karate chop, nope, this is not going to make it onto the group. So that's Facebook groups for growth doesn't work very well, at least in my case, and it's something that you've experienced as well. So moral of the story is there are no shortcuts.
There are no shortcuts, and take that from someone.
You cannot shortcut it. It's when you first get the idea, you're just like, oh man, this is going to work.
This is a brilliant idea.
First 1,000 users, let's get it. Okay. So let's talk about, you know, revenue with startups, right? At some point, are you considering, you know, quitting your full-time job and becoming a full-time online founder / CEO? And, you know, when do you see that happening?
I couldn't say that fast enough. That is a strong yes. I, when the time is right, I do want to make sure that I have the time to spend to my team, or spend with my team, developing the product. And that will look like not having any other time constraints. When do I think that'll be? I hope that'll be in the next year. I'm checking for that for 2020. So we will see. We will see. And
So I think the last thing that I'll probably touch on, because I think we're running out of time here, but growing a team, right? How do you get very smart, you know, talented people who you need to build startups, because they're kind of hard things to do. So you really want clever people who are motivated. How do you get them to work for you for, you know, in some cases you offer them equity, in some cases you pay them, you know, what's your strategy around that?
There's no one way to do it right. There's 50 million ways and people are still trying to figure it out. I think a lot of it has to do with like just finding people that believe in the same dream, and it's more than just the money or it's more than just the equity. You really want someone who's, you know, willing to be in the gutter with you. Like literally people who have that same entrepreneurial spirit and want to build for the long term, not just want to, you know, change your LinkedIn or your social to founder or, you know, whatever the superficial things. It's more this to start, you know, is find people that you think are in it for the long run. And then, you know, if you don't have any money to pay them, throw equity at them. You know, if you do have money to pay them, arrange a different, arrange something that's financially makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. And but I think the first crucial step is inviting people to work alongside you that are in it for the long run, and understand that building a startup takes a lot of work, and it's really hard in the beginning. And so people who are looking for instant gratification or an immediate payout, be able to recognize that instantly, because that's not who you need on your team.
So I think that I'll wrap up by asking, you know, this very important last question, which is, so you, as an entrepreneur, you can build startups for sure, you know, high growth startups in emerging industries, you can create your own industry. But I would say, what's the difference between that and starting a small business, right? What's the difference between, why are startups so hard when it comes to, you know, tech products or physical products that are new versus, hey, you know, I'm going to open up a consulting service, or I'm going to open up a restaurant, or I'm going to open up, you know, a co-working space. Like, why are startups exponentially harder, and why do 90% of them fail?
Oh, this is such like, there's a multitude of answers for this. Okay, so the way I'm understanding the question is like, what's the difference between starting like a high growth, high scale tech startup versus like a lifestyle business where you're like, you're doing eyelashes, you're selling bundles, you're consulting businesses, you're doing something, you know, just kind of on a smaller scale rather than a multi-billion dollar scalable tech company. So the difference is that when you, I don't even know where to start. there's many differences. So first of all, when you're building a tech company, you need people that specifically work in tech and can build and manage the product. That's one thing. You need investors. You need, which that brings a whole lot of other things into play. You need to reach exponentially many, 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 many more people, hundreds of thousands to millions of people to that your product needs to reach, whether if you're doing a smaller business like consulting or whichever, you just need maybe thousands of people to reach and, you know, for your business to be sustainable and successful. I think that's a pretty overall general answer to answer what the basic difference is between a kind of a smaller lifestyle business, small mom and pop, with, you know, their audience is like maybe 100,000 people to 200,000, 300,000 people, and sustaining that small business versus building a high growth, high scales technology startup that needs visibility of millions of people and has investors that are counting on millions of returns. And the stakes are a lot higher with a tech startup.
So that just brings a flood of questions around funding. However, we're going to cut it short, and we'll probably have you on again to talk about this. But I was going to lead into the funding aspect, but just a one sort of one word answer. You know, are you looking for funding? Do you want to be funded, or do you want to continue being a bootstrapper?
So until I get funded, I will have to continue being a bootstrapper. So that's a really quick answer. I'll be bootstrapping until I get funded, which is not a bad thing for me. It's not a bad thing for me. I don't need funding right now, to be honest. I want funding. But when I say I don't need funding, there are some startups that if they don't get funding within the next month or two, they're going to die.
They're dead.
And that, right, that means that they have to shut down business and find a real job. So that's not my position right now. I'm in a very good position, bootstrapping. I'm good. And I think this is also a really important and pivotal time for me to really, truly, deeply develop the product, develop the team, you know, and just really focus on setting a strong foundation for Unwind. And I am going to probably look to raise in 2020. But it's not a bad thing if you have a startup and you just bootstrap and you just live off of your own revenue. I mean, that's less hands in your pocket and less hands as far as like investors, less minds on the machine that you're building, which is both good and bad. The minds are good, then they could catapult you to different areas and avenues. But also just when you're bootstrapping, you can, it's truly yours to craft and create. And then so that's a good thing about not having funding. And bootstrapping is not bad. And I appreciate this question, because I think that the dream is, yeah, we're going to launch a startup and we're going to get funded. And
we're going to raise millions of dollars. Exactly. Let's go. Build exactly. A team.
And that's how people judge success. It's like, you know, forget perfecting the product. It's about whether or not I can post on LinkedIn or post on my press release drops on Crunchbase that we just secured this multi-million dollar investment. Like,
oh God,
And that's good. Happy for everyone that's doing that. More power to you. That's wonderful. But bootstrapping is also fine. It's just fine.
And I think there's definitely a lot of different models that work. And I think it depends on, you know, what you want. In an article that I think we both got featured on Mogadum, you were quoted saying, as a solo founder, the scariest part for me is worrying if I'm doing things correctly.
Yes.
Somehow my confidence vanished, but I'm finding it again.
Yes.
Let's wrap up with saying, how did you get that confidence back, and what can we expect from you in the future?
Yes. So how do I get that confidence again? It's trusting yourself. I think it's really important for me to express the vulnerability in this entrepreneurial journey, because I feel like a lot of people are potentially doing it for the wrong reasons, then find the right reasons. And it's just like, it's the poppin' thing to say, like, yeah, I'm a founder. Yeah, I have a business. I'm doing all these different things. But like, not enough people are saying, listen, I've cried. I've boohoo cried. I've baby cried multiple nights because of mistakes I've made, or because I felt hopeless, or because I felt like I just didn't have the help I needed, or I didn't think I could do it. I've done all that. And I don't think that that type of reality is being shared about what this journey is truly like. And so, yeah, that's the power that I really wanted behind my statement in the article. And I said that I lost my confidence, and I did, being in a space that's unknown and new to me. And I also said that I'm finding it again. And the beautiful thing about this journey is that I'm learning the power of trusting yourself and trusting yourself through mistakes. It's just kind of like when you drop a cat, they land on all fours, no matter how you drop the cat or whatever. It's just like the same thing with you. It's like, we are unbreakable beings. And if I can just have a moment for my ladies right now, ladies, okay. We are unbreakable. We literally have the tools deep and down ourselves to do absolutely anything. And I don't know what happened. I don't know who said it. I don't know. I just don't know when we started to believe that we couldn't. That's all a part of my journey. And then I found my confidence again by trusting myself and trusting myself to get myself out of situation, to fix mistakes. I think that is the beautiful part of finding the confidence again. And that's pretty much what I did, and what I encourage other founders and entrepreneurs that are going through this journey and identifying with that statement as well.
So I'm gonna say that's amazing. I think that being transparent is very powerful. I hope to have you on again at some point when you've raised that big bag that you can share some with me as well.
Yes, I'd love that.
So if someone wants to get in touch with you, where can they find you? Where do you hang out? What's your social handles? All
yes,
that.
Yes, please. So I would love, if all the ladies listening to this, please, please, please go sign up for Unwind. It's an amazing platform. It's literally pioneering a new movement in travel for women. If you're interested in hosting, I'd love to connect with you and hear your different ideas about what you want to bring to your city. If you're a traveler and you just want to enjoy life and stop going places just to eat at restaurants and actually make really valuable connections with amazing women and have stories to share to your family and grandchildren, and that stories that will last forever through experiences, please go sign up to Unwind, and it's joinunwind.com. If you want to reach out to us on social for Unwind, it's also at joinunwind on all handles. And if you want to connect with me personally because you identify with my journey, or you want someone to join your team to raw you on of what you're doing, or if you need help or anything, please contact me via my handle, which is my name, Arabia Omrani, A-R-A-B as in boy, I-A. My last name is Omrani. U, M as in Mary, R-A-N-I. And that's how you can reach me.
All right. Well, this has been amazing. Hopefully we'll hear a lot more about what's going on with Unwind. Thank you for your time, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Thank you, Adrian. This podcast has been amazing, and I can't wait to share it. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. See you.